We need to know who seconded the motion on page 2.
I seconded.
Okay. So with the addition of Pat Janik seconding the motion for that, are there any other additions or corrections to the minutes?
Move approval of the minutes dated April 19th and May 17th, 2016.
Is there a second?
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you. We're off and running. Tonight, this is the first public meeting for two of our new members, Marian Anderson and Donna Roberge. So I'm going to read you a little bit about it. First, Marian. Marian brings varied experiences from both her work and background as a community volunteer. Some of these experiences include serving as the executive director of the Huff Foundation in Vancouver and as a community relations manager and ombudsman, permit manager, and code coordinator for Clark County. In volunteer positions, Marian has served on the Vancouver Planning Commission, Vancouver Board of Adjustment, and a charter board member of the Council for Homeless. Welcome, Marian. Donna Roberge brings a diverse background to the Commission on Aging for the positions she has held and in service to the community. Some of those include sociology instructor for Northern Michigan University and the University of Dayton, as well as Clark College, where she taught for 15 years. Currently, she is a Clark College Professor Emeritus, Sociology. Donna's community service includes Camas Washougal Port Commissioner, as well as a board member for the Humane Society of Southwest Washington, Camas Library Friend and Foundation, and Clark County Arts Council. Welcome, Donna.
Thank you.
Moving to the Vice Chair report.
Yes, we met in our COA met for an extended work session in June last month to decide on 2017 speaker series topic. And we had a very rich discussion. And overall, the overall consensus was to continue the theme of aging in place, but focus on supportive services to do that. So our next steps, we did come up with the initial ideas for topics for the speakers, and our next steps would be to finalize those topics and then start the planning for next year. So we have another dynamic topic and very excited to grow upon this speaker series method.
Does anybody else have anything to add about the work session? Would you like to move?
Yes, I move to make 2017 speaker series supportive services for aging in place.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you. Well, for those who may not know, the purpose of the Commission on Aging is to manage and implement the Aging Readiness Plan, and it has four areas of focus designated. Housing is one. Supportive services is one, as well as transportation and healthy communities. So we look forward to our emphasis for next year. But that does not mean we're taking our hooks out of housing. Once our hooks are in it, we keep them in. So we never leave anything behind. Public Health Advisory Council update.
Yeah, so back in June, the Public Health Advisory Council reached out to us and wanted to know about our healthy aging programs and projects. They were reaching out to all their community stakeholders and providing a summary of Clark County's healthy aging programs to the Washington Department of Health to build upon these programs and to have everyone on the same page. So we provided that and continue our relationship with the Public Health Advisory Council.
Linda, do you have a communication report?
Well, yes, I do. The Communication Committee has met twice since our last meeting on June 17th and then again on July 1st. Basically, we are our current priority is to plan the housing conference, which we have a date for, the culmination of this wonderful work that the community has brought together. It will be on February 9th, 2016, and we have reserved a location for that. We are working on some of the logistics and tasks that go along with planning a conference. Since the meeting that we had on 7/1/16, I know we have are very close to having a speaker for that day, as well as we have a catering, DuckTales Catering, that will be doing our Continental Plus breakfast. So we diligently will be working on the details for that and anything else that comes before the committee.
And I think that's February 9, 2017.
Yes, it is. Yes, wrong date there. The other already came.
Anything for the treasurer to report, Chuck?
No, just fine.
Okay. Anything on housing?
No, not this time.
Okay. And Bill is not here this evening, so we'll skip that part of the agenda. Throughout this year, the Commission on Aging has been focusing on housing and various aspects of it. And tonight is our sixth installment. We'll be hearing from our community expert in a minute. I just wanted to recap what we have done thus far. We started out with a speaker who spoke about how to have those conversations when it comes to changing your house or remodeling your house or whatever, and how to approach that. We've learned that aging in place is not just a physical thing, it's also aging in place with your friends, your family, and your community, and staying involved and staying connected. So we looked at a lot of aspects. Tonight we're going to be looking at a different one, and as we've gone along with each of these, we have collected highlights from each of our speakers. We're methodically making a list of these highlights. At the end of the year, there will be a report that pulls all those highlights together from the various facets of the community experts and the questions that have asked. And you have played a key role in that. The public has been very involved with this series. So that report that will be first draft of we'll be looking at in December. That report then, when we pull it together, will be presented to the Clark County Councilors in January at our joint meeting with the councilors. So it's going to take on a life of its own after that. And in February, we will be sharing that report with key players in the housing industry, representatives from the nonprofit sector, and also policymakers. So we really look forward to taking the work of this long series that will culminate at the end of the year, reinvesting it early next year, and hope we get a lot more results in helping to reshape the housing market that better serves everybody who's participating in it, from the consumers to the entrepreneurs. Tonight, Mark Escherman is our community expert. Mark has been a member of the Housing Committee with the Commission on Aging for 3 years, so that's how we know about Mark. Like all of us, there's the volunteer thing you do, and then there's what you do for a living. And Mark has been a loan officer for almost 20 years, with the last four focusing exclusively on reverse mortgages. In his career, he has worked for regional banks and local mortgage brokers. When he joined the Housing Committee, one of the things Mark said was he wanted to help seniors and boomers get the most out of their home ownership and be able to age in place in the housing of their choice. Mark is a certified senior advisor, a credential that applies to a wide range of professionals who demonstrate their professional competence and knowledge by working well with older adults. We are pleased to have Mark here this evening, Mark Escherman, and we have asked him to focus primarily on financing options as it relates to aging in place.
Well, thank you for having me this evening, also this morning. It's almost 5 o'clock, so it's definitely evening. We've been working on the Commission on Aging. We've been working on housing for the last, well, all of this year. We're always working on it, but this year we put a real focus on housing. And we've had great speakers, and I'm hoping to continue that. So if you want to look at any of the past topics that we've gone through earlier this year, you can go to the website for the Commission on Aging and pull up that information. So, and mine will eventually be up there as well. But as we started putting this, first of all, What do you guys think about that title? Is that too long? 17 words for the title of this speech? That might be a little bit long. But anyway, the key is we're working on seniors and boomers and ways that they can age in place and stay in their homes for as long as they choose. So this is a little bit about me. But Marjorie, you just already went through all that, so we don't need to repeat it. Anyway, the topic here is aging in place and how do we pay for it? Because in most cases, when we age in place, or try to age in place, if you've been in the home for 20, 30, 40, 50 years or longer in that same house, what worked for you back then may not work for you when you're 65, 75, 85, or older. And so we need to start figuring out what do we need to do with this home so we can achieve the objective of aging in place. So whenever I get a chance to speak to groups, it's usually in a teaching environment. I get to teach classes to realtors and help them with their continuing education. So, you know, I usually go more from a teaching angle. So today, you guys have to be ready to learn. So I looked up trying to find a good quote. I always like to start off with a quote. And so I was looking around on Google, seeing what I could find to help us with an age in place quote. Well, good luck finding that. It's too specific. So as I was cruising through there, I found a couple of quotes from Henry Ford. And I thought, well, Henry Ford knows a little bit about adapting. So what he said was, anyone who stops learning is old, whether at 20 or 80. Anyone who keeps learning stays young. The greatest thing in life is to keep your mind young. And I thought, well, that's what we're going to work on today. We're going to learn something today, so everybody, when we walk out of here, we're going to be a little bit younger. So, you're welcome. But another thing that Ford also said that I think also goes with the whole objective of what the Commission on Aging is trying to do, and especially with this housing series, is Henry Ford said, if everyone is moving forward together, then success follows itself. So we don't have to really worry about success of this of our mission if we're going to bring the community together and work together to try to achieve what our objectives are, which is helping people age in place. So when we get into what I'm here to talk about, how do we pay for it? Well, there's a lot of different ways we can fund the renovation and the rehabilitation or the retrofitting, whatever you want to label this as, on homes so people can age in place. So, and the little, if somebody could grab the little handout that came up, it's a little fact sheet that kind of gives you the information, the basics on each of these programs that I'm going to talk about. And so that's a good thing to take home, hang on your fridge, call me if you have questions on it. But you can use that to also follow along with what we're going to talk about here. So when we're looking at renovating and remodeling, there's two different ways to look at it. We have programs that are designed to allow people to age in place that are in low income or even very low income, up to moderate income. There's different programs that help them finance these renovations. And then we also have programs that are more for people that don't have any income limitations. And we'll break down all these different programs. But the first one is a little story. With the Clark County Housing Rehabilitation Program, we have this person who lives here in Clark County, out in the Orchard area, 78 years old, has lived in his home for a long time, but now his home is starting to kind of suffer because it hasn't had a chance to put any updating or repairs into it. His wife has passed away, so now he's down on less income. So if you look at this, he's got just Social Security income, he's got about $15,000 left in his IRA, but he needs to have some work done to his home. Well, as we see, his house is worth about $240,000, which is the tax-assessed value. And he owes a little bit on a home equity line of credit. Well, maybe he could do these home improvements just using his home equity line of credit. And that might be an option for him, depending on how big his line of credit is and how much he's got left in it. But what he could do, since he lives within the county limits, and based on this information here, he meets the guidelines for the Clark County Housing Rehabilitation Program. So he could actually borrow up to $40,000 and use it for home improvements, make his house safer, more livable for him. You know, in this case, he put on a new roof, new gutters, downspouts, grab bars around the toilet to make it easier to get around in the bathroom, and then he put a wheelchair ramp in the backyard. Now, if he was to do this on just a traditional home equity line of credit, well, gosh, if you're going to pull $25,000, $30,000, $40,000 out, we're looking at payments between $150 and $250 a month. Well, he's already on the budget. So the county has a program that's funded by HUD that they can actually help people and give them up to a $40,000 loan. It does get put a lien on their home, but it's at 3% interest or somewhere in that ballpark, 3 or 3.5%, with no payment. You know, the interest is just deferred, it's just simple interest. And so if he wants to make payments, he can. But if he doesn't want to, he doesn't have to until the home is sold. So that is a great program to help somebody age in place effectively. Well, the next program is the City of Vancouver. And the difference between the Clark County and the City of Vancouver program is, one, if you live within the city limits of Vancouver, you can't do the Clark County program, and vice versa. If you live outside of the city limits of Vancouver, well, you can't do the City of Vancouver program. Well, the City of Vancouver, in this example up here, we have Pete and Susan. They live up in the Heights, which is definitely within the City of Vancouver. They bought a house 4 years ago, put 10% down, so they got in there with very little down. But now, since that point in time, they have both retired. And they found out there's some problems with this house that they bought a few years ago. Needs some work. Well, how are they going to pay for that? You know, now that they're retired, they may not qualify for doing a traditional refinance to pull that cash out. In this case, they only have about $22,000 saved up in retirement to begin with. So how are they going to fund this renovation? As we can see down here in the blue, our subflooring in the kitchen was all dry rotted, so that needed to be replaced. Then you find out when you go through there, well, how did it become dry rotted? Well, they had leaky pipes. Then the leaky pipes mess up the insulation, and the problem goes on and on. Well, next thing you know, you've got a $20,000 bill to take care of. Well, good thing is, they live within the same City of Vancouver city limits, so they can qualify for that rehabilitation program. They can get up to $25,000, not as much as you can in the Clark County program, but still get up to $25,000, no payments required, very low interest, the interest is deferred, meaning it's added on to the loan balance, and whenever that home is sold down the road, that's when the city will get paid back. But by doing that, again, if they were to do a traditional home equity loan or home equity line of credit, you're looking at payments of anywhere from $100 to $150 a month. Well, they're already on a budget, so contact the City of Vancouver. And if you have your little fact sheet there, in the fact sheets, we have it labeled down for each one, each program. It has the purpose of the program, who to contact to get more information on the program or to actually apply for it, some of the basic terms and types of repairs that can be done. Each program with the city and the county has some different qualifiers, and I'm not going to waste your time and go through every single one of those eligibility requirements. But if you're interested in one of those programs, contact the information on that sheet there, and then you can actually get more of the specific details to make sure you qualify, or somebody you know qualifies. But anyway, so in this case, Pete and Susan, we were able to get that $20,000, get all that work done. They could have been out for $25,000. Maybe they could throw in a few extra items to get fixed on their house in the meantime. So no payments for them. Another option is the USDA Single Family Housing Loan and Grant Program. So this is one that's not used very often, but I think it's important for people to know about it. And this is for people that live in the USDA Rural Development Area. And in Clark County, about 65% of Clark County falls under the USDA Rural Development Area. And really, if you want to, you can actually go to Google and look up the USDA map for Clark County. But it basically goes from just north of the Vancouver Lake out by the Clubber River, and it falls all the way down 179th Street through by the fairgrounds. It goes clear out to Meadow Glade, which is south of Battle Ground, drops down to 503, then heads out towards Hawkinson on 119th Street, clear out to 212, and it jig-jags all over the place. But the bottom line is 65% of the area of Clark County falls under the USDA program area. What that allows is if the Clark County program ran out of funds, because they only get about $250,000 a year from HUD to fund that program, well, when you have 400 and some odd thousand people that live in this county, $250,000 doesn't last that long. So, an alternative program for someone to use if they have some renovation that needs to be done at the home is the USDA program. This example with Carol, 65 years old, she's lived in the home for a long period of time, but now she's having to use a wheelchair, having a hard time getting around this house. And with only $1,200 a month, that doesn't leave her a whole lot of money to pay for or save up money to pay for these renovations. Well, the USDA program, what she can do is she can actually borrow up to $20,000 on a loan at 1% interest over a 20-year term, which means that payment is only about $89 or $90 a month. And then she could also get up to $7,500 in a grant that is money given to her that she doesn't have to worry about paying back at all. So in her case, she could actually pay for all the repairs and the retrofitting to her house, her bathroom, make it more livable for her. And she's only going to actually have, in her case, if she gets the $7,500 grant, well, that comes off the $27,000 bill. So she's going to finance that $19,500 at 1% interest. So her payment will be about $88 a month. But now she has a home that she can live in, and probably for the rest of her life with a very small payment. The USDA program doesn't have the same as the City of Vancouver and Clark County have, where you can actually defer those payments and not have to worry about them. You do actually have to make a payment each month, but it's a pretty small payment. The last one, when we're talking about the low and moderate income, is Habitat for Humanity has a really nice program. It's called A Brush of Kindness. And that's one that I didn't actually know very much about until I started researching this whole topic. And what you can do with that program, this gal here in Washougal, Joyce, she's lived in her home for a long period of time, again, just pretty much living off Social Security income. The house is just kind of dilapidated on the outside. Landscaping issues, exterior issues. Well, this Brush of Kindness program, it only works on the outside of the home. So what they'll come in and do, they painted her house, did re-caulking to help it make it more energy efficient. Got rid of some big shrubs and bushes that were causing problems. And they removed an old garden shed. Well, it was a value of about $6,000. Well, Habitat for Humanity, through this program, covered the cost, and they used volunteers to do the labor. So it's a very efficient way of getting some things done to help people out with their homes. Now, there are some income qualifiers for that program as well, which the details are on your fact sheet. But again, all of those programs I just mentioned, those are to help people that just, it's going to be hard for them to take care of themselves and finance those projects for themselves. So it's good that we have these programs available. There's one program that I didn't put on here, and it's available to anybody that uses Clark Public Utilities for their if they have electrical heating. And that's the programs you can do for weatherization, whether it's new furnaces, a heat pump, insulation, windows, and you can finance up to $15,000. And get about 3.5% interest, so it's a really economical way of doing some home improvements on your own homes, and there's no income limitations on that program. Then, now that we bump over to the home improvement programs or the renovation programs without income limitations. So, first one we have is the Fannie Mae Home Style Renovation Loan. What that's going to allow, we have this example here with Bill and Marcy. They want to go buy a house because gardening is their big thing. Well, having just a normal sized garden like the rest of us have, that's not good enough for Bill and Marcy. They want to have a little small farm. So they've got this house out in Battleground, Brush Prairie that they found for $325,000, small acreage lot. But if anybody's been looking for property recently, my wife and I have been looking for a home. We're looking for a small acreage lot, similar to what Bill and Marcy are looking for. And if I saw a price of that now for $325,000, I'd be thinking, wow, that's a smoking deal. Well, it is, but it's because the house is a fixer. It's a fixer-upper. It's hard to believe that $325,000 home right now is a fixer-upper, but that's what we have going in our housing market right now. Well, what they could do is they could go and finance in $95,000, in their case, worth of improvements to the home. They're putting in a sunroom, remodeling the kitchens and bathrooms, new appliances, paint, carpet, tile, all kinds of stuff that they're doing, new furnace, $95,000 worth of improvements. Well, you add the $95,000 to the $325,000 purchase, That's $420,000 worth of cost. They only have to put 5% down with this program. So $21,000 worth of out-of-pocket for their down payment and their portion of the financed renovations, and the rest of it gets financed in. So that's not a bad deal. They can actually, again, they have to income and credit qualify for this program, but more than likely, they're going to have some instant equity in this home, even though they're only putting 5% down. They can put more down if they'd like. And the nice thing about the Fannie Mae program is when you do the renovation, so you could have Bill and Marcy could have still lived in their existing home and gone out there and had done some of the work on this new house that they bought in Brush Prairie, still living in their existing home. Then, once all the renovation's done, they could get their other house sold and take that money, the proceeds from the sale of their old house, and plop it down on the loan that they just bought, borrowed, and have it re-amortized, so they call it recasting, without having to pay any money for refinancing. They get a one-time shot to bring that loan balance way down and have a much lower payment. So that's available with the Fannie Mae loan. The next program, FHA has a great renovation loan. Probably more of the renovation loans are done through the FHA 203K program. I did quite a few when I did forward lending. I did quite a few of these loans. And it's a really neat deal where you can actually go in and buy a home, just like the Fannie Mae program, buy the home and finance all your renovation costs all in one loan. This one only requires 3.5% down. So in this case, we have Phil, who's just recently retired and recently divorced, doesn't have much money left over. If anybody's gone through a divorce, they probably know what Phil's dealing with. But he's going to go buy a home with very little down. He found a fixer-upper in Vancouver for $210,000. But he needs about $75,000 worth of improvements to be done to this home. In this case, a new roof, new siding, paint, plumbing, electrical, carpet, all kinds of stuff. Adds up to $75,000. Well, you add the $210,000 purchase price plus the $75,000 of improvements, that's $285,000. Well, but the house, once it's all done, is only going to actually appraise at $265,000. So gosh, what now is he going to do? Well, with this program, all he has to do is put 3.5% down of the $285,000, which comes out to just a little under $10,000. So he puts his $10,000 down, finances the rest, so he can actually finance up to 110% of the as-completed value and have a very affordable payment and not have to worry about paying for all those renovations out of pocket. So this is a program that we probably see used more than the Fannie Mae program. The Fannie Mae program has some extra benefits to it, but we use this one probably more frequently. And the next one is my specialty, which is the FHA reverse mortgage program. So if somebody was wanting to do some renovations and they have a reverse mortgage, you'll see the term home equity conversion mortgage, or HECM, that's the acronym that we use. That's FHA's reverse mortgage program. And FHA doesn't fund the loan, but they insure the loan so that the lender or the borrower, if they ever were to take a loss, FHA covers that loss for them. But with this program, Ron and Shirley is our example. They're both 76 years old. They still have a pretty good chunk of change in their IRA, $140,000. And their home is worth about $325,000. And they have a reasonable size home equity line of credit. Well, they could do some of the home improvements with their home equity line of credit. But again, if you're borrowing another $40,000 to do your improvements, well, that's probably another $250,000 plus added to the monthly payment. Well, they don't want to use their retirement income to make payments. So with the reverse mortgage, in their case, they could pay off that $40,000 existing line of credit they have, and plus get an extra $150,000, $155,000 to do the home improvements at their pace. One thing I forgot to mention, with Fannie Mae renovation program or with the FHA renovation program, you've got 6 months to get those renovations completed. So that's one thing to keep in mind when you're doing those type of renovating. With the Fannie Mae or with the FHA reverse program, they could do the renovations at their own pace. They could do the work themselves if they wanted to. It's much more liberal, I guess you could say, with the guidelines. So the difference with the reverse mortgage also, there's no monthly payments. So they could, in this case, they could borrow $195,000 and not have to make any monthly mortgage payments. Now, since they're still the owner of the home, they've got to pay their property taxes and their homeowner's insurance so that they maintain the home. But, you know, I'm not sure where else you can borrow $195,000 and not have to make any monthly payments. The loan gets paid off at the time the home is sold. So, but now, the next little section we have is talking about new construction. Well, as I started going through this whole project of doing renovation and new construction financing, when I got to the section with construction, I've done lots of construction loans in my career. I don't do them anymore. But there are so many construction loan programs out there that we'd probably be here until midnight, at least. And unless you guys want to stay here till midnight, no?
We don't.
No,
thank you.
So, really, when it comes to construction financing, if someone was looking to have a new home built that has universal design features, and we have our little booklet on the universal design program. You don't have it? Okay, sorry. Well, go on our website, we have it there. But it gives you all kinds of different features that people could use to have in a new home, make it much more accessible and age-in-place friendly. And there's quite a few builders here in Clark County that we can refer you to that can help you build these homes. Well, a lot of these builders have their own construction lines of credit, so they'll pay for the construction financing for you, and then at the end, when the home is done, you can finance it or with traditional financing, or if you have the cash to pay it, you can pay cash for it. But that's how probably most of the construction financing is being done right now. If you're working with a builder that does not have a construction or financing abilities for you, well, there's lots of different construction lenders out there. Home Street Bank, Banner Bank, Wells Fargo, I think Bank of America, Columbia Credit Union. There's lots of different lenders that do construction financing, and sometimes it's with as little as 5% down. So there's a lot of different opportunities to finance new construction and to get that home that you can have designed to age in place. Because sometimes when you look at doing a renovation project on your home, the cost of the renovating can just be too expensive and too inconvenient. It might just be better to get a whole new home built. And our next couple of speakers we have next month, we have Sherry Adams, and she's a realtor here in Clark County. And she's going to be talking about different selling opportunities and buying opportunities for seniors. And then the following month, we have a builder that's going to be talking about how to find the good builder that's going to be able to build your home to meet your needs, to age in place, and different programs that he has. But it gets really complicated when we start talking about new construction financing. There's just so many options that we'd be here all night. The last thing I want to leave you with is Colette and I were talking about this when we were talking about putting this series together, or this speech together. What about what's tax deductible when you're doing home improvements, especially for medical needs? Are any of these things tax deductible? And if you want to get more detailed information, you can go to IRS Publication 502. That's going to give you some information on what can be tax deductible and what's not. But in this example here, we've got Phyllis. She's got arthritis, has heart problems. She's not able to climb her stairs anymore, which, of course, her bedroom's upstairs. Her bathroom is upstairs. Well, she was a doc told her, hey, you need to get a shower, a roll-in shower, downstairs. Well, the cost of doing that was about $14,000. But adding a bathroom to your house is probably going to increase the value of your home. So you need to, in order to find your tax deduction, you take out how much your home went up in value, which in her case was $6,000, subtract that from the cost of the remodel, so you got left over with $8,000. So she's going to have $8,000 that she can add to her itemized deductions. In that publication 502, they have a list of a whole bunch of items that are things that can be used to, you know, adding wheelchair ramps or widening doorways, bars, grab bars, those type of things. Those don't really add value to your home, but they can still be tax deductible. And they have a whole entire list of those items on that publication 502, the things that you can do to improve the quality of life in your home, and then also have those expenses be tax deductible. So I think, you know, the next couple speakers that we have coming up are going to be, it's kind of funny, I wish we could all be up here at the same time, because Aaron Marvin, when he gets up here, he's going to be talking about how to find a builder to do these home improvements and what to look for. And then Sherry's going to be talking about, Sherry Adams is going to be talking about how to buy and sell and what to look for when you're trying to find an agent place. And of course, I'm here to do the financing and give you suggestions on that. I wish we could have all three of us up here at the same time, but just as a kind of work. So, anyway, we should open up for questions, a little Q&A.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Do members of the commission have questions for Mark?
I do. I know from what I've read, it seems like the reverse mortgages have kind of gotten a bad rap. And I don't know if it was because of the misunderstanding of that people don't understand the what that means for their home, or do you have anything to add to that?
I've been doing reverse mortgages now for the last 4 or 5 years, and I've heard all the complaints. Some of it does definitely come from just people not understanding how the program works and not using it properly. But some of it too was the program itself needed correcting. And over the last 3 years, we've had some huge corrections made to the reverse mortgage program to make it much more safe for people to use. For example, one of the problems was what we call the non-borrowing spouse. Well, to do a reverse mortgage, you have to be at least 62 years old to qualify. Well, what happens if you have a 62 or 65-year-old spouse and that's qualifies, but then you have a 55-year-old younger spouse that doesn't qualify? Well, under the old rules, you'd have to take that younger spouse off the title of the home and off the loan. And as long as that older spouse was alive and living in the home, well, no payment was due. Hmm. Well, what happens when that older spouse passed away? That younger spouse was kind of left. Hey, I gotta move out of my house. That was a horrible rule. So they made a rule change about 2 years ago that now that non-borrowing spouse can stay in the home the rest of their life. As long as those taxes and insurance are still paid current, they can stay in the house the rest of their life too. So that really solved a lot of the problems. The next thing that we did was we started adding what they call the financial assessment piece, which required to do a full credit income analysis to make sure that people can afford to stay in their home. Because what we saw was people that had really bad credit and bad property tax payment history, those type of things, well, guess what? They were more likely to default on the loan by not paying their taxes and insurance. And all of a sudden, the reverse mortgage servicer is thinking, yeah, we don't really want to foreclose on an 85-year-old homeowner, but they haven't paid their taxes in 2 years. What do we do? Well, now we're doing more of a credit income check on people up front, so we're avoiding a lot of those problems. So that's a long answer to your question.
That's good.
But that is where some of the negative press for reverse mortgages came from. And unfortunately, some too was just, there's an old saying in the media world, if it bleeds, it leads. Well, the real negative stories, that's what shows up in the newspaper.
Okay. Marion, did you have a question?
Thank you.
I did.
Yeah.
Mark, I thought I heard you say something that I've never heard of before, and I thought it was rather interesting. You said something about recasting a loan.
Yeah, on the Fannie Mae renovation loan program, it's called Homestyle. Some people call it re-amortizing, or we call it recasting. And that's for say in the case with, it was Bill and Marcy was our example of theirs. They owed about $400,000 on the total renovation loan that they had. Well, once they sold their other house that they were living in before, maybe they have $200,000 worth of proceeds there. Well, they could apply that $200,000 to their renovation loan, bring that balance down to $200,000, and have that be their new payment plan, as opposed to having a payment plan based on a $400,000 loan. So they call that recasting. And the Fannie Mae loan program, the renovation loan, allows you to do that. The FHA program, on the other hand, does not. So you can apply $50,000 on your FHA renovation loan, and you're still stuck with a payment based on the much larger loan amount. So there's some disadvantages there.
Do other members of the commission have questions before we go to the public? Do you have any? I did want to say we do have.
Yeah,
this is the brochure that Mark mentioned. It's on our website, and it's a good how to make sure your home is accessible.
Yeah, that's on the universal design features that allow people to age in place.
So now it's time for members of the public to ask questions. Just a reminder, we are on CBTV, so this is taped. We'd appreciate it if you'd give us your name as you ask your question. Over here.
Hi, my name's Kathy. Can you give one or two examples of who reverse mortgage would not be good for? For example, if you have a very low mortgage, say under $50,000, would that be not a good thing to do?
Good question.
Well, the question is, are there times where reverse mortgage is not good for somebody? Yes. The list could be very long of reasons why it wouldn't be good. One is short-term uses. If somebody wanted to do a reverse mortgage but they plan on selling a home a year or two down the road, I would probably talk them out of doing a reverse mortgage. Now, there have been circumstances where it still was the best option for them. Another option where it's not a good idea is if you have people that are not good at handling their money. For example, if somebody gave you a credit card, walked over to Jim and gave you a credit card for $10,000 and says, you can use the whole $10,000 on that credit card, just pay me back whatever. Well, maybe Jim goes crazy with that and heads to Vegas, I don't know. Well, I've had clients with reverse mortgages that get this $150,000, $160,000 line of credit, and the first thing they do is anybody that asks for money, they give it to them. So it's hard for me to ask that question to somebody, how are you managing your credit cards, or how are you managing your budget? That's something they have to really kind of ask themselves, but it's something that they do have to go through reverse mortgage counseling before they can even apply for the loan. And that's one thing that the counselor will talk to them about is, how are you at managing a budget?
So it has nothing to do with the amount. Say something about large
mortgage. Yeah, not really. I mean, it can in different circumstances, but usually it's what are you going to use the funds for, and what length of time do you plan on staying in this home? Those are some of the big ones. Yeah, you have a question?
My name is Pat.
Okay.
I had a client, I'm from New York State, but I had a client that I worked with the county. Her son wanted to use money that she had, but she didn't. What she did is a reverse mortgage. But the problem was she was on a lot of county and state funds. She had Medicaid, she was getting help with her heating oil that she needed in New York State, and things like that. She was getting a lot of help. And I was concerned that getting in that whole lump sum of money, because her house couldn't be paid for, that she was going to give her son money so he could buy something, was that going to knock her out of government help because all of a sudden she has this influx of money? That was my
concern. It could. I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to speak on Medicaid, especially Medicaid. That's governed by each individual state. So when we're talking about New York State and Washington State, even if you had an attorney here from Washington, they probably couldn't speak intelligently about Medicaid rules in New York. Yeah, but here locally, kind of the general rule of thumb is when it comes to qualifying for Medicaid and having a reverse mortgage, if you've left the money in your reverse mortgage line of credit and you haven't pulled it out, that's not considered an asset by Medicaid standards. Once you pull that money out of your reverse mortgage line of credit and deposit it into your bank account, any money that's not spent in that 30-day time period is going to be considered an asset. Mm-hmm. So I've had a client that unfortunately made that mistake. She always loved to have money in her checking or savings account. Well, she went and pulled $30,000 out of her reverse mortgage line of credit, parked it into her savings account. First thing Medicaid did, said, give us that $30,000. Well, if she would have left it in a reverse mortgage, it was not considered an asset, and so they couldn't have used it. It's one of the things I like to try to stay in touch with my clients on a regular basis to make sure that they're avoiding those types of issues. But yeah, that's a scary one too, because I've seen that where people want to just first thing get this big check available to them, and they want to give it to their family member, and oftentimes it's being used for bad purposes. So, anyway.
Yeah. What about being a veteran and on reverse mortgages? Is there any problem of us doing it?
No. Well, VA, they have VA loans. The Veterans Administration does not have a specific reverse mortgage program, so you would be using the FHA reverse mortgage program. But yeah, have lots of veterans that have used reverse mortgages. It just depends on what their equity position is and make sure that they have enough equity to qualify. And if they own the home free and clear, then they shouldn't have any problem in that regards. But yeah, they don't have any special programs for being veterans. There's no added extra benefit for being a veteran to do a reverse mortgage, but yeah, I've been asked that a lot. Does VA have a reverse mortgage program? And they don't have one specifically. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. One other thing, but it's directly and indirectly. I spent, you know, anybody out in the public trying to get information from this building representative or whatever, they can't get the information because of the phone system that they got here that says you gotta have the name of the person and do this. I spent 45 minutes. I finally hung up and decided to come over here on my own in my chair because I got so frustrated trying to get through to somebody because I couldn't find anything to get through. You call the city and they give you that 397-2000 number, and that covers everybody. That's where I got involved. But I'm just letting you know that's a problem that us seniors run into and call frustration. And you don't let to keep people away from doing things, that would be the perfect way to do it. And probably wouldn't surprise them, some of them.
Well, the city building is over that way. So, for starters, this is the county building. But no, I understand your frustration and that can happen with just about any type of customer service, you know, whether it's with a bank or a credit union or medical services. I understand your frustration that when you're trying to get a simple answer and you just want a human being on the phone, sometimes it's hard to get connected. And when all else fails, I usually say, hit the zero button, which is the operator.
It didn't work.
Are there other questions for Mark?
I won't be able
over to here. Mark, there's a question over here.
Anytime you use the word mortgage, what are the loan fees and processing fees for a reverse mortgage?
It's going to be different for every single loan.
Give us an analogy on one.
I'll give you an analogy. I have a client that she's over in Portland. Now, she's in a kind of a precarious situation. She's way behind on mortgage payments. She's actually in foreclosure on her house, but in her case, her total loan fees are gonna be about $2,500. Reason being is we're doing what they call a premium pricing, where the interest rate, instead of qualifying for 4.5%, she's taking the interest rate at 5%, or 5.06 to be exact, but she's getting a big credit back to cover almost all of her closing costs, all but about $2,500. Now, what could be very expensive with reverse mortgages is the mortgage insurance. Now in her case, where she's doing a large draw, and she's taking all the available funds right off at closing, based on her house, FHA charges a mortgage insurance premium of 2.5% of whatever her home appraised at, which is gonna be right around $500,000. So 2.5% of $500,000, that's $12,500. That's a big mortgage insurance premium. So we're doing the premium pricing, and then you have your normal fees of title, escrow, appraisal, those type of things. But you know, FHA gets that premium. A lot of people think, well, gosh, I don't want to pay FHA any more money. Well, what FHA covers in that mortgage insurance is she will never have to make a mortgage payment for as long as she lives in that home and keeps the taxes insurance current. And even if it gets to the point where she ends up owing more than that house is worth, she's not responsible for it. If she owes more than that house is worth at the time the home is sold, FHA has to come and pay that difference for her. So FHA takes a lot of risk. To give you an idea, during the early 2000s, when property values were skyrocketing and people were taking out reverse mortgages, the mortgage insurance premiums were a little cheaper. But then all of a sudden you get into 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, when property values were plummeting, well, guess what? People were paying off their reverse mortgages at those times, or some people were passing away and their heirs were paying off the reverse mortgages at those times. Well, there wasn't enough equity to pay off those mortgages. The borrower had got all the money, didn't have to make any payments, they weren't doing anything wrong. It just happened to be the market value of their home had just plummeted, and the borrower is not responsible for paying that back. The house is. Well, if the house doesn't have enough, then guess who gets the call? FHA. And FHA got themselves a little bit of trouble because they were about $1 billion short to pay off. And so they made some adjustments to the program. And so it's really hard to quote fees on a generic because it's going to be different on every single client. What you're trying to do is to make it impactful for them so that it's solving a need that they have. Sometimes it's expensive. Oftentimes it's cheaper than a traditional refinance. It's on a case-by-case basis.
Are there other questions?
I just have a question. My name is Kathy. I would like to find out, are there any exclusions to what you're talking about when it comes to a home? Single-family dwelling, manufactured homes, condos?
Each individual program is going to have their own list of exclusions. So, to give you an example, the City of Vancouver, their program, you can actually qualify for a manufactured home in a park. You can qualify up for up to a $5,000 grant. Now that's to be used only for safety and health reasons for improvements. Other cases, as long as it's taxed as real property, it could be a manufactured home that's been title eliminated, is what they call it. So that would qualify. So there's you have to go to each individual program to get the real specifics because they have also some asset limitations. So if you have too much money in your 401k, well, you may not qualify for some of those programs. So it's best to actually go directly to those sources. And if I would have put all that in that little fact sheet, it would have been a small book. So I try to keep it down to a minimum. But the best thing to do is go to their website or give them a call, and you can find the specifics of the eligibility requirements. Hopefully that answers your question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want a microphone?
No.
You guys hear me?
Oh, yeah.
You guys don't want to know me.
Yeah, we know you.
Yeah, you don't want to know me. I'm a minority in this crowd. I'm an old pioneer. I used to build houses when it was affordable. I still know how to build affordable homes. They will not allow you to build affordable homes for security. They want you to build mini mansions. Just look at the ads of paper. We're living in a manufactured economy. We're living in a manufactured crisis. And people like him come up and they talk about stuff they know and they take stuff that's already in writing. You showed me a book there a minute ago on green housing. That's good stuff. There's nothing new with the housing problem. People are looking for a place to live, a place to sleep, a place they can afford. I knew how to do that. I've been to the Vancouver Housing Authority. Vancouver Housing Authority is not building affordable housing. I say it again, I've been there, I've told them, and I even went there last time. And I show them some proof that they're not. Because I show proof that someone else is billing less than what they is selling it for.
Okay, I'm going to have to interrupt you because we're dealing with Mark now. Okay, so thank you. Other questions for Mark?
Right behind you.
Mark. Yeah. Yeah, City of Vancouver will lend up to $5,000. Actually, we're going to lend, though it's a grant, up to $5,000 for manufactured homes in parks. It's for structural health and safety issues. It's not going to be if they want new appliances in the kitchen, but it's going to be things that are structurally necessary just to keep the house safe. But it'll be up to $5,000.
Yeah. Is there certain requirements?
Yeah, and that's where you have to go directly to the City of Vancouver, and you can get a list of their specific requirements. But, I think you have to be, well, I'm not going to say I think. It's best if you go directly to their website, and you'll actually get the exact.
So thank you, Mark. And probably after our meeting, Mark will be hanging around, and you can talk with him some more if you would like to. So we'll continue now back to our business meeting. Thank you, Mark. Our next order of business is a board appointment to AAA DSWA. So, who wants to be the appointee? So, Pat, tell us a little bit about AAA.
Well, the Area Agency on Aging, the reason this title is so long is they also include disabilities now in their title. But they provide a variety of services to our county. There's over 165 agencies on aging in our country. They began with the Older American Act in 1965. The way to distribute the money coming out from the Older Americans Act, money for transportation, food, like Meals on Wheels or senior centers, was through the Area Agencies on Aging. So they do that in every state, and then depending on the state, they may participate in other programs. In the state of Washington, they do a lot of case management for the Medicaid system in the state also, in addition to the Older American Act programs.
Thank you. Also, the Commission on Aging, when it was created some 3-4 years ago, one of our identified partners in that process was the AAA. So they have always been important to us. Do I have a motion that the Commission on Aging appoint Pat to be the official liaison?
So moved.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Pat is now a representative to AAA. Congratulations, Pat. Now, the next item is a board member appointment to Agency and Aging Resource Network. And Linda, tell us a little bit about the most recent meeting
First
you attended.
First, ask who wants to do it. I do.
I just want to know a little bit about the network first.
Well, Christina's here could probably do a better job, but the Aging and Disability Resource Network provides an integrated, I'm reading from this, integrated network for healthcare, long-term services, emergency medical services, social services, and disability groups to convene. They had an initial meeting that I attended in June, and there were over 25 organizations represented by 50 people in attendance. Their next meeting is August 26th, and I found that it was extremely interesting, and I think it's a great fit for someone from here, like me, to be on that.
And you also brought our attention to a number of the handouts from that session, so
right.
We appreciate it. So do we have a motion to appoint Linda O'Leary to the Agency and Aging Resource Network?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And our third item, we deferred discussion of that until August. Okay. So now we're at the point where there are general public comments that can be made. So does anybody else have anything they would like to say? Just so you know, even though the audience looks thin, we are widely viewed on CBTV, and we appreciate CBTV for that. So if that's all for the good of the order, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you. So is this to be
consent?
Yes. And I'm busy, so where do you want to go?
Where do you want to go?
I have icicles on my
Swing me.
Oh, that's in Lauren. I need to just sleeves. My dogs
got out.
Oh, no.
So I have to go run home real quick.
Thank you for the overture. Appreciate it.
In downtown. Hold on. It's
the other piece.
Oh, good. All right.
It's on 109 West.
Well, good job, Chair.
Oh, thank you.
And you manage the audience very well.
I know it does. We have some familiar members.
Yeah. I got that.
Okay. Are you reciting the address?
Okay, we survived our first one.
Except when I learned a lesson, I need some sleeves. I've been very cold.
It's on Main and 15.
Did anybody tell Linda?
No, but she has a bag. Her stuff's right there. But I have to run. So I'll see you guys.
Did somebody pick these up?
Yeah, somebody will pick those up.
I'll take it.